Welcome to DC On Screen, a podcast about the DC Universe properties being produced for film and television. From next year's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, to television fare like The Flash, Arrow, and Gotham. To be clear, this is a spoiler-filled show. If you want to remain unspoiled, go catch up and listen to us after. I'm your host, David C. Robertson, and this is my co-host, Jason.
Hello.
As promised, this week we'll be recapping Arrow Seasons 1 and 2. But first, the news. On the movie side of things, we'll start off with Wonder Woman. Chris Pine is apparently in talks to play Steve Trevor, Diana's love interest in Wonder Woman. In the comics, Steve Trevor was an intelligence officer in the United States Army during World War II, whose plane crashed on Paradise Island, the isolated homeland of the Amazons. He was nursed back to health by the Amazon princess Diana, who fell in love with him and followed him when he returned to the outside world. Have any thoughts on Chris Pine, other than woo?
It sums it up. I mean, he said, okay, yeah, sure, why not? Throw Kirk in there.
All right, I feel pretty much the same way. Warner Brothers film chief Greg Silverman recently answered a bunch of questions. They asked him how he would differentiate the DC Universe from what Marvel is doing, and he gave lip service.
Not to us,
he said
I assume.
That they are, well, he says, we have a great strategy for the DC films. He didn't really explain that completely. He says that he's
he has
their strategy.
He has two dice he keeps in his drawer desk. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
He has two dice that he keeps
strategy,
in his desk drawer.
Their strategy is to put them in the hands of master filmmakers and make sure they all coordinate with each other. Well, no shit, buddy. Oh man,
that seems like the
he says one.
So his strategy is to start an email chain. That's his entire proposal for keeping this universe together. Good luck there, sir.
Man, I
the guys who wrote
not.
DC Comics worked in the same building for most of the time, and they couldn't keep their shit straight.
Yeah.
Jeff Johns is a walking encyclopedia, and he's barely holding it together.
So when asked about the complaints of the Batman v Superman trailer being too dark, he simply said that there is an intensity and seriousness of purpose to some of these characters. The filmmakers who are tackling these properties are making great movies about superheroes. They aren't making superhero movies.
Well, that may be one of the problems. I mean, it's a fine turn of phrase, but do something with it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hire one of the Fast and Furious directors to take on Aquaman. That's the one bit of news I did see. Where's our plan?
Right. Well, the guy that did Furious 7 also did Saw and Insidious. So
I'm not sure if you're trying to make a case or make me quit this podcast. With that list,
I liked Saw. I didn't see Insidious, so I don't really know anything about it. I didn't see Furious 7 either, so I can't judge it. I don't know it.
Well, I'm sure the action will be great.
It looks real dumb.
He's proven he can do action.
It looks
so
real dumb.
At least let him focus on that. It'll be Aquaman,
right.
Fury Road 2.
Now, Greg Silverman also said that. Well, he hurry up and jumped back and said, well, we looked at everybody when we were looking at female director, or when we were looking at directors. We didn't just choose a female for Wonder Woman and blah, blah,
Although
blah.
It would be smart.
Yeah. He said, Michelle was, after Patty left, Michelle was the one that was the next choice. So she does great, amazing work with female director, female characters, such as in Monster. So he's kind of straddling both sides of the fence there.
I just wouldn't mind him actually, coming out right with it and just go ahead and put a pin in that and say exactly what he's doing. I'm a guy. I have no idea how females work. So I asked her to do it. That sounds entirely fair.
Well, the way you write a good female character is you just write a good character. End of story.
That's my guess. I don't know. I still
One
feel like
think.
If I'm going to take a swing at it and spend about $50 million, I'd rather have her at the helm.
Right. Now, this is interesting because you've actually brought this up on the show. They said to him, you've ruffled some feathers hiring competing writers to work on some projects at the same time, such as with Wonder Woman. What's the strategy? Mm-hmm. He says, every project is different. On some projects, we have multiple writers working together. In some cases, we put writers together who have never been a team together. And sometimes, there's only one writer whose voice is right. In the case of Wonder Woman, the right approach was to have writers pitching different scenes within the framework we created.
That's a fancy way
bullshit.
Of saying, yeah, that's a really fancy way of saying we didn't know who was going to do it, so we threw a stake into a room with five starving people. Let him go.
All right, now over to Batman v Superman. there are some rumors from a usually correct superhero scoop bringer, Umberto Gonzalez, who goes by El Mayambi, that Batman will be using a kryptonite spear against Superman, and that we already caught a glimpse of it in the Batman v Superman trailer.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see anything green, but I haven't gone through and, you know, frame by framed it. I was kind of hoping someone else would just post the finished picture for me.
Yeah, someone did post the picture, and it's the scene where he's standing and there's the columns and the question mark is on the column. He's holding a thing. It's inconclusive to me.
Man's response to meeting a demigod, throw a spear at it.
Well, if it's a kryptonite-laced spear.
I mean, at least we're getting fancy now. That's better than our Spartan ancestors, whose response would have been the same. It would have been copper, which they were very proud of at the time.
Right. On to the television side, we'll start off with Arrow. Lexi Alexander, director of Punisher Warzone, has confirmed that she'll be directing an early episode of Arrow in August.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I haven't seen Punisher Warzone. I haven't seen anything she's directed. Based on the trailer for Punisher Warzone, though, it does look like Arrow is in her wheelhouse. I mean, it's dark, gritty, violent.
Good.
Good. Yeah.
Have Queen kill a couple people again.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice?
It would. I'd like him to come back all happy and just killing wantonly.
Yeah. That would be amazing. not much for the character, but still.
Never more content than he's been, but...
Now they have confirmed Damian Dark as the big bad for season 4, and Hive is going to be around. And David Ramsey, the actor who plays John Diggle, is saying, from my understanding, Hive is going to be a big part of next season's big baddie. We're going to delve right into why Hive hired Deadshot to kill Andy and what Hive is all about to begin with. There will be a lot of Diggle's connection to Hive next season, so stay tuned.
That thread needed pulling.
In addition to that, When asked about Damian Dark and Hive, Stephen Amell hinted by only saying the words Coast City.
Okay. All right. Stephen, you bastard.
Yeah. Now, Mark Guggenheim announced that Wendy Miracle, one of the Arrow's executive producers, will be stepping up as a co-showrunner, so I'm guessing they're having a little trouble stretching themselves. Which is to be expected.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, come on, guys. That's a lot on your plate. You're busy. I get it. Do what you do.
Moving over to The Flash, producer Andrew Kreisberg announced at WonderCon that we'll be getting Mirror Master in season 2, as well as Dr. Alchemy.
Yay!
He also says we've got one thing that hopefully people will lose their minds over. He's not saying what that is. Obviously.
Now you're pitching it pretty hard. Ted Kord.
Now, Victor Garber, the guy that plays Dr. Martin Stein, says that he and Robbie Amell's Ronnie Raymond will both appear in the season 2 premiere of The Flash, but after that, quote, we'll see what happens. Garber also assures us that upcoming episodes of The Flash and Arrow will explain how Dr. Stein will be on DC's Legends of Tomorrow while Ronnie Raymond stays on The Flash, since the two men operate as a unit to create Firestorm. By the way, they did announce that DC's Legends of Tomorrow begins in 2016 as part of CW's mid-season lineup. 15 episodes have been ordered.
So 15 and mid-season?
Mm-hmm.
All right, which mid-season are we talking about? Mid-season. Like early January?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's another good reason to get through this year. LOT waits for you.
We are going to finish up news with a little animation. Justice League Gods and Monsters Chronicles. Machinima, Blue Ribbon Content, and DC Entertainment has released a new trailer for Justice League Gods and Monsters Chronicles Season 1. It's a 3-episode series from Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett. It's a digital series that will begin June 8th in anticipation for Justice League Gods and Monsters, an original animated film that will be released by Warner Brothers Home Entertainment on July 28th. Gods and Monsters Chronicles turns the DC Universe a little wonky. It's an alternate world where Superman is the son of General Zod, Wonder Woman is not from Themyscira, but the warring nation of Ares, and Batman is kind of a vampire bat, and he's not Bruce Wayne. It really looks pretty damn cool.
Well, I mean, it's a world where everyone is a dick, or the biggest dick version of themselves possible, I guess. And who is to save us in this wacky world?
I thought that's what they were already doing with the cinematic universe.
Right. It's Meta. That is our savior. Deal with it.
By the way, Machinima has already announced a second season of Justice League Gods and Monsters Chronicles. So apparently they're having some fun with this.
Well, good. Maybe it's got some play.
It's Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett.
Play every now and then.
It's Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett. I'm just going to go ahead and give them the benefit of the doubt.
No, yeah, no. They get as much rope as they want. I'll go to Home Depot and pick up whole reams of it. I don't know what rope comes in. Maybe reams. Whatever rope comes in, I'll get several of them. They can have it.
Fair enough.
I can be okay.
That's it for the
that
news.
Knowledge. Well, hey, one thing we've never mentioned, by the way.
What? What have we never mentioned?
Vixen.
Jason.
We've never mentioned Vixen. I just want to throw it out there, just in case anyone gave two dams.
Well, if they bring it up and they tell us when it'll play, we will mention it. But they won't.
All we know about it is
they
that
mentioned it
may
was a thing.
Be connected to the universe of the rest of the Arrow and Flash, and then it may
no.
be a thing that finishes. It's animated.
The last I heard, yeah, the last I heard is that it was an animated web series that it will introduce supernatural elements into the Arrow Flash universe, and that those themes will continue into the main Arrow and Flash show. But I mean, they haven't said when it's airing. I actively looked into it like a week ago.
Yeah, I couldn't find much more than a shout out here and there.
Yeah, so
one
which would be
like
cool
a promotional drawing.
I mean, there is a rumor going around, even though it's a very, very sketchy rumor, that they're going to somehow figure out a way to bring Constantine into Arrow and just have him kind of show up every once in a while as a means of continuing that series.
That'd make me happy. We haven't really discussed Constantine in any form, and I'm sad about that. I enjoyed the crap out of that show.
I haven't even. I watched two episodes and stopped.
I know.
If it gets picked up or it looks like it's going to actually continue in some form, I'll watch it.
I don't blame you. It was a lot of fun, though. It really was. I don't know who that British fella is. He did a fine job, though.
All right. Should we get into the recap of Arrow Season 1, then?
Sure. Or as I'll call it, the plunge into darkness.
Now, whenever it was, a couple of years ago, it wasn't quite that long ago, that Jason and I started watching Arrow. Because we had high hopes that this would be a part of the cinematic universe. And, you know, if they actually do Crisis, it might be at some point. But it's not at
My
this
hope
point.
Remains in spite of itself.
Right. But when we what was the deal we made when we started watching that show, Jason?
Well, all right. The details are a bit sketchy. But it was very roughly this. It had been on, Arrow had been on CW. And I heard amazing things. But I just never could, because we tried to watch those first 10 minutes, and it was way too much. It was way too much. And we both independently
tried to watch those first 10.
Well, we had both separately like tried to sit down and actually view it and just couldn't do it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something, I wasn't ready. I don't know what it was I had to adjust, but I was not adjusting quickly enough. So
it was the show don't tell aspect. It was nothing but voiceover for like the first 10-20 minutes of that show was just nothing
it
but
really
voiceover.
Was.
Just very blatantly obvious voiceover.
Well, I mean, voiceover
was bad.
Obvious anyway, but it was. It was.
Well,
anyway, we kept.
I say obvious because we see what he's doing. He's like getting up off of his bed and walking to the window, and he's like, I get off the bed and walk to the window. It was that bad.
Yeah.
It seemed
like it was. I don't know. It seemed like it was going to be a joke, and then it wasn't. It was amazing. But here's the deal, though. We sat down and we said, okay, the rest of the world, you know, meaning a couple of million whole people, seem to care, seem to think this is a great show. What are we missing? Because mm-hmm. I think at that point, season one had completely aired, and they were talking about going into season two.
Yeah.
So we didn't start watching week to week until season two. We binged the crap out of season one. But we made a deal where we'd sit down and watch the first, I say it was the first four. You say it was the first five. Is that right? Is that where our disagreement is?
Yeah. Yeah. That but is our disagreement.
We sat down to watch a finite number of episodes. And the deal was that if either one of us thought that we should click on the next one, then we would. And the other one had to sit there and try it.
Right.
To the show's credit, by the end of the first episode, we unanimously voted to click next. Didn't even have to think about it. By the end of the second episode, we'd forgotten the experiment existed. We got up to get more cereal, and we sat back down.
Right. I'd forgotten about the cereal.
Yeah, there was plenty of cereal. Plenty of cereal. We by that point, we were there. I forget how many we watched that night, probably. We just kind of sat there and chewed through about 7 or 8 of those things, and then chewed through the rest of the season very shortly after.
I do remember the number. We watched 6.
Was it 6?
We watched 6 episodes in one night, and then decided to go to bed, and both of us retired to our stable positions of you in your bedroom and me in the writer's room.
Uh-huh.
And continued watching alone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was more the like, I want to watch more, but I have to lie down now. That was pretty much what I was thinking at that point.
Yeah.
It was...
And I think I wound up watching like 7 or 8 in that one night. All told,
It was good. And before we get into season 2, which is just going to be... I don't even want to talk about it. I barely even want to talk about it. I'm hoping this conversation is actually cathartic in some way. Maybe I'll learn something about myself at least. But season 1... Dude, it moved. It was like episode 3 or 4. He gets arrested for being, the hood.
Right, and as I stated to you,
the hood.
I told you this way back then. When he gets arrested for being the hood, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is basically where Smallville was in like season 7.
Right.
Like with how fast they were moving. I don't know if you remember this, but like the first episode, the first time we saw Tommy Merlin, we both looked at each other and I said, either that cat's going to be a bad guy or he's going to die at the end of this season.
And I voted die at the end and we turned back to watch.
And we were right.
Both of those things kind of happened. I remember cocking my head sideways and looking at him and trying to think if I could see him in a mask of some kind. No, he going to die. He's an innocent face. He shall perish.
Oh my gosh, man. Season 1, it did move. It moved, but...
It moved in a way that other shows need to learn from.
It did, but at the same time, it kind of sucked.
Well, there was some of that. I was still... By the time I finished season 1, I knew there were some parts I didn't like. Several of them we've talked about. Or at least mentioned, because they're just harassingly bad. But, like, those lisps. Those damnable lisps.
The lisps. Yes.
Thea, Moira, whatever her name is.
Moira.
She's dead now, thank goodness. But she... They are cloying. I couldn't watch those characters. Like, just watching their emotional development must be the feeling of trying to get to a cup of water across a room in a desert and being dragged down by 1,000 devils. I don't understand how people thought that they were going to play. I couldn't
now,
do it.
Season 1 was interesting in that I felt like the island flashbacks were more interesting than the primary storyline in the first season.
Easily.
I was much more interested in what Slade and Shadow were up to with Oliver.
Yeah. Now, all right. Interesting aside here. Should we bother doing season 1 and then season 2, or just go?
You know what? We can just go. But let's give season 1 its due.
I want to draw between the two that I don't know how to. Yeah.
Sure. We can just go for it, man. Just do it. Just do whatever you want to.
Well, all right, sure. We'll just create our own little playland here. Because, look, the flashbacks part, that was where it was at. I kept watching each episode because I had to know how he got on that island and how he got off. And that was one of the more intriguing parts of the entire show. He was there now, and he was, there was some stuff to clean up, and Thea had a drug problem, and his mom was presumably up to something. And, she had him kidnapped on, like, the first episode. But
did he have a drug problem?
Oliver?
Yeah.
No, Thea did.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. I thought you said he had a drug problem. And I was
No, he...
Yeah, by the way, Thea's drug problem ended really quickly.
Right. It went away. She went through enough that, like, I don't know. It seemed to be just a transient little stage in her life, and she moved on. Fine. But watching her go through her little drug thing, which...
As it was, yeah.
They made good use of it, at least for Vertigo, which that guy was kind of fun.
The guy was kind of awful, but he was way over the top. He was kind of awful.
I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it, too, because I was certain that he was just doing Hamill from Batman.
He admitted as much.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Watching him, though, was pleased. Got to be like watching a clown car hit the back of a semi-truck.
Yeah, and as we've seen Hamill basically doing the Joker on The Flash now, we can just say, like, oh, he was doing Hamill poorly.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
all
his heart was
in
the right place, so I give it to him.
That's pretty much
his heart was.
That's pretty much it.
In the right place.
He came from the right place, so he's got street cred there.
What was sad about season one and season two about Arrow is, looking back on it, I don't remember a lot of the weekly villains. Like I was looking over some recaps and stuff, and just I remembered Bronze Tiger. And I remembered China Way, or whatever, however they're saying it.
In the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
The Royal Flush Gang.
And
that was fun. That actually was good. I actually enjoyed that episode.
You know who was they should have done a lot more with was Clock King.
Oh, God. Yeah. He has been so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, they just kind of didn't do a lot with him.
Nah. And Gotham's got him now, so it's over.
Do they?
Gotham.
Well, I mean, Gotham also has Dollmaker.
Well, yeah. That didn't seem to...
Kind of.
No one seemed to care there.
Including me.
And they're both sharing Victor Zsasz, so whatever.
Well, the actor.
Yeah, that bothers me even more than sharing the characters for some reason. I don't know why.
Speaking of weird acting choices, or actor choices, recasting Sarah was so weird.
I know.
It was just weird.
Before we started this, I wanted to set a timer to see if you got to that under 20 minutes. I would have lost, but...
You would have lost.
But only... only from the news.
Whoa.
Only from the news.
You know what? I'll get to it in a second in more depth, but... one of the great...
Deep away.
One of the great travesties... I want to get to this first. One of the great travesties is that you freaking have Alex Kingston playing Black Canary's mother, and you have done nothing with it.
Shit all, yeah.
You have River Song, for God's sake, as Black Canary's mother. Why is she not Black Canary proper from Justice Society? Why isn't she out there kicking ass with Team Arrow against her ex-husband's wishes?
I'd like to think there's a casting thing there. Because otherwise, that is unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable.
I mean, if it's one of these things where they're like, oh, well, Alex Kingston has always said that she'd be on tap whenever, but we just haven't found a way to make that... No, screw you. You've
failed this podcast.
Come on, let's get River Song and some fishnets. Let's do this.
Seriously.
Let's do this proper.
Bring it on out there. I know she can kick ass. I know she can.
Well, yeah. So the addition of Sarah Lance.
They barely used her. She could have been anybody.
Yeah, I know. And hopefully she'll come back and do something actually worth a damn. But I'm not seeing much hope for that in the future.
No. And no chemistry between her and Lance whatsoever. Nothing. At no point have I been like, oh, yeah, those were clearly star-crossed lovers at some point. No.
Well, it makes more sense when you imagine, just pretend that he has his real English accent instead of that sputtering wreck of lisps.
Right. No, they make sense as a divorced couple. That's about it.
They do.
Like someone who got married on a bet and had to give up 3 years later and pay their friend.
Sarah Lance is not a character that even exists in the comic books, and I'm hard-pressed to find a viable reason for her to be a character here. Now, I know that TV shows, I understand. I'm not crying because the comic book is different than the show or whatever. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it, is what I'm saying. Like, why do we need Oliver to cheat on his girlfriend with her little sister?
I mean, it...
Why?
It did round out the picture of just how big a piece of shit he was before he got on that boat.
I didn't need it to be that rounded.
No. I wasn't questioning it before. I wasn't sitting there on the sidelines going, hey, he seems like a good kid. What's your problem? No. None of that was happening. I was like, oh, yeah. What an entitled dick. It seemed like a way.
Like, that's the thing. That they were like, oh, well, we've got to have a way for Captain Lance to hate Oliver Queen. We've got to have a way for Laurel to be mad at Oliver. Okay, look, he could have slept with any model. He could have slept with her best friend. It could have been pretty much anybody. It could have been someone she didn't even know. And the fact that they reported her among the missing, and then Laurel was like, oh, you piece of shit.
We've got
they
it.
They could have
we're
done
good.
Any number of those kinds of things. And we don't. And the showrunners are like, oh, we needed someone to be Black Canary before. No, I know they didn't think that far ahead, first of all, because they said they didn't.
No.
And two, again, here's Alex Kingston over here not being Black Canary. That
just criminal.
There was your path.
Right.
There was your path to Laurel being the Black Canary. It. Oh, my God.
I don't know. Maybe they just tried to out-clever themselves, which is an exercise that anyone can win with everyone around them losing.
And I don't know if they were trying to out-clever themselves or if they were trying to out-CW themselves. Like, well, we've got to have a love triangle, blah, 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 blah. No, you don't.
Well, we were going to have that girl on the boat with her and, you know, with him. And then, yeah, well, she was going to die and Laurel will infiltrate. And somebody goes, what if it was her sister? Give that man a raise.
And by the way, that the first chick, the chick that played Sarah Lance in season one.
For all of 25 seconds.
Right. Like, I don't know her acting abilities. I know they cast Katie Lotz because she actually knows how to do these stunts and whatnot, and the martial arts. But surely there could have been some, surely there was someone who knew how to do those stunts who wasn't so stumpy and just plain weird looking.
Who
didn't she's make a puckerfish face?
That's the part that gives me every time I see her. I think she's gonna like wander to the other side of her aquarium and look for germs there. I know we're terrible people. I've accepted that, but. How am I not supposed to think of a puckerfish?
I know, and you know, I'm not looking forward to her return. Not only because I want death to mean something, but just because
that's the biggest reason.
It's not only because of that, I actively dislike Katie Lotz. I don't like Katie Cassidy either. Just
no,
ban all
just...
Katies.
Right.
Go away.
Have we learned nothing from our previous adventures? And somewhere they're just stubbornly doubling down. No, you will not hate this woman. We're going to make this work. The hell you are.
Speaking of Katie Cassidy, there's an argument to be made that it's not the writer's fault, that it's her fault, that she can't act her way out of a paper freaking bag.
No,
and
no, not if you lined it with olive oil before she got through. In no case. If her role Katie Cassidy being confused and you handed her that script, she would still fail the fucking audition.
Probably. Some of her choices are just so bizarre. Just... the way she looks and reacts to things, it doesn't seem human.
The best example was when the actual reveal of Oliver's identity by Slade there at season two ending.
Yeah.
I don't know what that call was. She just drops her jaw and looks back and forth like she's watching a freaking ping pong tournament.
She does. And if they had if they had literally said, Katie, okay, here's what we're going to do. You are going to sit there and stare at a wall. That would have been a better shot.
Take a permanent marker circle on the wall. And that's her motivation, that circle. I would have been happier in post if they had just taken one frame when she had her just, you know, slack jaw look. Just take that one frame and rinse and repeat. Don't even show me the rest. Mm-hmm. It'll look weird. It'll look like one of those bad 80s endings where everyone jumps up in the air and does freeze frame. But I'll take it. I'll take it over what I saw. Because I would have thought that was weird. And then if you'd pulled me into a side room and said, this is the footage we actually had, I would have hugged you for your great choices and walked out happy with you.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to season one. The Tommy and Laurel storyline. It was gut-wrenching in how
woeful.
Predictable it was.
Mm-hmm.
And how truly CW it was.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
Hi,
from...
viewers.
from
here's a thing that obviously won't work out.
Tommy, exactly.
The square peg. Meet Laurel, the circular hole.
And maybe poor Tommy walks
just for taste.
Like, this guy is supposed to be Oliver's best friend, but I'll be damned if I ever saw any actual chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah, but to be fair, like, Stephen Amell's entire catalog of acting choices was just, like, levels of dour. That's all he displayed. He walked on set on any given day and got it, you know, took the 3 hours it probably takes to get him into all those scars, and then walked out there, and the director just told him, "We're going to go with level 8 dour today." "Yes, sir." And he moved on. And he got excited on the days where he walked in and said, "We're doing level 10. Ooh, the strong silent look. Yeah, okay."
Oh, I keep thinking of the scene where Tommy, like, goes to tell Laurel how he feels, and he, like, looks up, and she's, like, making out with Oliver in the window. Like, ask yourself, how often does that really happen in real life, where you're just walking down the street, and you look up at a random window, and someone's just half-naked and getting down? And now, you know...
I've only been to Bourbon Street that a little further, times, but not even there.
Take that just that equation just a little bit further. And how often does it happen with someone you know? It was important for the scene, I guess, for Tommy to, like, hang his head and be like, "Aw, shucks."
Right. it was aw, shucks. That's what it was. Oh, God. No, I mean, the believability of it aside, because I'm willing to take that as a trope if you earn it, but you didn't earn it. I mean,
no, you know what's unbelievable to me?
It'd be different if we didn't know that they were going to work out, but they didn't.
Right. Speaking of believability, what's unbelievable, though, is that Oliver Queen would ever want to be with someone like Laurel. She's awful. She's an awful character. An awful person. Just the whiniest, snivelingest, weird Egyptian eye, foot-shaped face-looking thing.
I
don't get it. Her head looks like a foot.
It's true.
It looks like a foot.
It's true. That chin with its leveling degrees of being... I don't know. Here's the thing. Big thing I want to know, by the way, is between season 1 and season 2, and then again between season 3 and 3, did she in fact have chin surgery?
I believe she had to have. I mean, you look at some of that. Look at some of the stills from season 1.
I don't know how to compare those things. And I don't know if it's in my head... But it looks like season 2 has distinctly more chin. Like, what's that guy's name?
Well,
Sam Axoff. Bruce something. He would be jealous.
They pretty ardently reshaped the character with her wardrobe between seasons 1 and 2. Like, season 1, like, she's always kind of got, like, a semi-professional look. She's got, like, the tennis shoes or something on. Season 2, she's always in, like, pumps. She's always got, like, some kind of a... you know, ballroom type dress on. She always looks like she's about to go to a fancy party, no matter what she's doing.
Yeah, but she was always about to go to a fancy party. She took on a high profile job during season 2. Like, during season 1, she's basically doing nonprofit work, and you know, she actually fits her dress code. I'll give her that.
Oh, sure.
And that's
sure,
all.
Sure. And I agree I do agree that they put her in situations where it would make sense for her to be dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with it is those heels make her look taller. So not only are we seeing suddenly a very tall Laurel,
mm-hmm.
it's just exacerbating the problem of suddenly her 5-foot chin,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because she has clearly had some nip and tuck work done. I mean, she has had something done. Like, she suddenly doesn't have the bags under her eyes. Like, I thought I was crazy for a minute when I started watching season 2, and I had to go back. And season 1 was so fresh in my mind that there was no way I wasn't going to put that together. Just the first time I see her, I'm like, "Oh God, what is
season
that?
One
is
as
that Laurel?"
Two was about to air.
Yeah. So I see her and I'm like, "Oh God, is that Laurel? Are you serious? What is happening?
What's happened to her face?"
Pop back over. Yep. She's got like 3 less inches of chin.
Mm-hmm.
She's got bags under her eyes. Oh God, she's a Barbie now.
Mm-hmm.
It was really creepy.
With
like,
apparently a crippling addiction problem that consists of 1.5 glasses of wine and half a Benadryl. That was the crippling story arc she had all season.
All of season two, just shaking. People are trying to gun her down, and she's staring at a bottle and shaking. So bad.
That's not... You know, there's no such thing as an expert on addiction, and I wouldn't claim to be one, but I'll tell you this, that's not what freaking addiction looks like. That's what an idiot looks like. when they're not going to survive a firefight under normal circumstances. If you're under fire and you're not thinking about throwing that freaking bottle at them, this life wasn't meant for you.
Right. Unless, you know, she's that kind of badass character who's going to, you know, pop the top off the bottle, take a couple of swigs, grab a gun, and start firing.
No, if you go all John Wayne on it, I've got you. If you pull even a, you know, end of Shaun of the Dead, pop the call, you know, have a couple swigs, make a Molotov cocktail, and throw it. Yeah, buddy. No, that's not what happened.
Yeah, I'd be down with that.
That's not what happened.
All right.
And then makes one of the unsteadiest shots with an arrow I've ever actually seen. By the way, did they not screen test her to see if she was action ready before they cast her as freaking Laurel Lance?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's one of the things that I wanted to talk about.
Pull her out into a gym and just put a camera on her for half a second.
Early in season one, there was an episode where she was accosted by like five or six dudes, and she fends them off. Like, she beats their asses.
Actually did it.
And they're like, holy shit, how did you learn to do? Where did you learn that? And she was like, I took defense classes and blah, blah, blah. Cool. Right. So just a little hint of the canary. And then they didn't do anything with that. And apparently they still haven't figured out how to do that, because even in new episodes, even as Black Canary proper, she looks like she's just flailing.
She's
like
awkward.
It's weird. Anything that we ever actually have to see their face.
Well, like, you have to have certain qualifications. You have to look good doing action to be able to do a role like that. Not many people do it.
Sure.
It's not something normal people can do. I sure as hell couldn't do it. No. She's completely can't even continue the sentence. It's so bad.
Speaking of bad,
what other aspect of this terrible show should we talk about? This terrible show that we love and cannot stop watching. Damn you, season
myself.
4, day 1. I'll be there.
Yep, I will too. Let's talk about Roy Harper.
Abercrombie.
Abercrombie. And they thought they were being cute, hanging that lantern. It was like, oh man, the fans are going to tear him apart because he looks like such a douchebag. Oh, I know. We'll introduce a completely useless character who calls him Abercrombie.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, Sin, one of the worst characters ever put on screen.
You know what?
Here's Sin is useless.
Sin shows up so rarely, and she's juxtaposed to such poor character choices on most of these occasions that I actually remember her fondly most of the time.
Because everything around her sucks so heartily
that I can't even get around to hating her. I don't have room in my hate things memory bank to fill it up with how much I hate Sin. As far as I'm concerned, she's fine.
Like, Sin is so bad that she is not even an archetype. Sin is a meme. She's a vague concept. She's not a person. There's no version of her that's a person. She says awful, stupid
things.
She's not
even the part I'm hating
on. And she doesn't
even... I haven't been, there's been just so much more that needed real focus. I haven't even gotten around to her. She's fine.
She's a little girl who's trying to do Paul Blackthorne's Quentin Lance, who was trying to do Harvey Bullock. She's like, yo, Abercrombie, like, what are you doing? Go away. I hate you so much.
She's actually a lot more laid back than that in my memory. I don't know. We need to move on from Sin. I just discussed how forgettable she is, which is working
in her favor.
So I'm going to go back. I'm going to let her crawl back into the recesses of my mind and be forgotten again. She will not be the first against the wall when the revolution comes. I'll give her that.
Because we've forgotten her.
Because I've forgotten to hate her, yeah.
So, the whole Roy Harper... The only thing that was ever interesting about Roy Harper in seasons 1 and 2...
The fact that he's Roy Harper?
Is the fact that he is Roy Harper. That is it. That is it. And the fact that he wants to help the Arrow. That's it!
Season 1, he's just another in the string of terrible choices that Thea makes. Which, bring me one example of a good choice that Thea made during the course of her run on the show. Because I ain't got one.
She just does
whatever some dude tells her to do. Whatever the dude is, whatever his name is, and he's always lying to protect her. So help me God, if I hear that sentence in my real life, I may go to jail. That may be the day I go to jail. I was lying to protect you, and all of this anger from Arrow is going to come up in me, and I'm going to actually defile someone's face.
It's funny. Thea is also a character who's not technically in the comics. Ollie doesn't have a sister, as far as I know. She is based loosely on a character from the comics.
Yeah.
But, my God, what a terrible character.
One of the things I liked about him, about her, all right, this is the only good thing about her drug addiction, and in season 1, I guess. it did give you the chance to do that quick little nod to, you know, Speedy's heroin problem back in the comics.
Kind of.
Mission statement over, though. Like, that's it. And it's not even within the context of the show. It's a meta joke for me, which is, it's a cute nod, but okay.
See, what would have been cool is if they didn't have Thea Queen. That's it. I'm done.
That's the entire proposal.
No, I mean, what would have been cool is if Oliver comes back, starts up his club, hires a young street tough, needs a job, and he's like radar for MASH. He's just always kind of got it. And Oliver starts calling him Speedy because he thinks it's cute.
And we're done here.
Kid has a secret obsession with the Arrow, finds out that Oliver's the Arrow, or even looked for the job because he realized that Oliver was the Arrow. The Arrow shows up at the same time Oliver Queen. That's not a coincidence. Give him a little credit. Move on with our
and day. You know, with that whole version, Diggle can stay. See, they give and they take. They gave us some shitty character like Thea and Sarah, or they took from us, however this works. Anyway, bad side, Thea, Sarah. Good side, we got Diggle.
Diggle is amazing. Diggle's worked out. Well, season one. Let me put it this way. Season one,
intense.
Diggle was amazing. Like, I love the chemistry between him and Oliver. Like, I love that Oliver kept getting away from him. Everything about it. Season two, Diggle is relegated to basically saying, copy that. Yeah. That's pretty much his entire line of dialogue in season two.
Well, he gets to run out and do some Suicide Squad stuff in season two. Isn't that where that showed up?
He does. And yeah. And he does. He does get to do that.
He's
and
got
that's,
the whole
Lawton
thing. You know, that episode where he runs off and finds Deadshot in that Russian prison was damn good TV right there.
Because I think for a minute, like, I think they gave him those episodes in season two because David Ramsey probably went to him and said, look, I just looked over the last few scripts and all I've said is copy that. I feel like Nichelle Nichols on friggin' Star Trek here. Hailing frequencies open, Captain. You're going to have to give me something to do.
Can we give me some dialogue that doesn't involve the copy-paste feature of Microsoft Word, please?
Because by season two, you've got, you have Roy running around helping Ollie. You have Sarah running around helping Ollie. Diggle's kind of just there.
He was Ollie wanted him to stay at home with his kid, which seems stupid because Diggle's clearly like the best fighter you've got on your crew. I get the bromance part. And, your family first and everything, but come on.
That wasn't season two. That was season three.
Was that season three?
You even have a
I thought
kid.
They were already doing that in season two.
Yeah. And what's more, we started out season
a hint
one.
Of
Diggle
future
has
things
the.
To bitch about in season three.
Yeah. Stay tuned next week. Yeah. But like season one, we have the cute little thing where he's kind of talking to his brother's widow. And we actually have some fine little character points for Diggle. And we see a bit of his character and who he is. And season two, he's just copy that. And, me and Lila are going to go on a Suicide Squad mission. Yay! Highlight for Diggle. And then next week, copy that.
Yeah.
It was odd. And they didn't replace him with anyone more interesting either. Like, at no point was Sarah Lance more interesting than Diggle. At no point was Roy Harper more interesting than Diggle. All Roy ever did was pine for Thea. Which, by the way, Roy is basically the male version of Thea. Every decision he makes is predicated upon what Oliver wants him to do or what Thea wants him to do.
Right. Or, you know, of it being what Oliver doesn't want him to do and him doing it anyway. But yes, everything is predicated.
Reasons.
Now, here's my favorite part, though, is Roy, as a character, seemed to have sensed this whole... he seemed to have sensed his own inanity. So by the end of season three here, he's basically insisted on writing himself off the show.
I'm good with that.
Like, Thea goes back and tries to grab him, and he just moves on to the next town. Nope. I won't be associated anymore.
Yeah. And if he comes back...
I'm off to find a misguided Batman throwaway somewhere. My fingers were crossed
how
when
I
said
wish.
That.
Yeah, how I wish we could get Red Hood and the Outlaws as an actual show.
I know. A man can dream. I know. We'll do a strange animated series. I'll take a webisode. Hell, I'll take a comic.
Well, they have
I'll even actually
webisode.
Read it.
They have a comic called Red Hood and the Outlaws. You should go check it out.
Yeah, I know. I already have the actual one. Just throw me like a Arrow season 3.5 :
Yeah.
Arsenal finds the Red Hood or whatever, or the Outlaws, whatever. Dude, you know, it's a comic. You can do whatever you want in there.
Now, Susanna Thompson as Moira Queen, one of this is the type of character that I have grown to absolutely loathe in any type of show.
There's no medium in which soap stuff. I'm happy about it.
This is daytime soap stuff. Like everything she says is a lie. Yep. She's caught up in. She is the personification of I was lying to protect you.
Preach it. I got nothing for it. I mean, I hated it for the characters, you know, and watching their mom die and everything. That should be a tearjerker. It was not. I breathed.
I laughed when Slade killed her. I laughed out of pure joy and excitement that we might not have to deal with Moira Queen and her odd mole anymore.
This is the
Stefano Romero type.
She is the
from Days of Our Lives.
I lied to protect you. Like she was the one in that family who carried that tradition on from, I guess, well, Oliver's dad was pretty bad at that too. Everyone had a damn secret, which is normally a lot of fun to explore in a show. Somehow they ruined that.
Mm-hmm. They did.
I hear people love House of Cards. How is it going so well there?
Yeah.
And over here, I just want everyone to like stop, get really drunk, sit down at a table, and explain what they've been feeling to each other. I'll watch an entire episode of everyone just sitting there taking shots and telling everyone their secrets.
Now let me just say this: John Barrowman, the guy that plays Malcolm Merlyn, I have watched him on Doctor Who and Torchwood.
Mm-hmm.
His character is pansexual.
Mm-hmm.
His character will sleep with pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
And even I cannot believe that John Barrowman would have sex with Moira Queen.
Mostly that's pretty much how that works.
That is a pretty man, and I'm just not understanding that. I'm just not feeling it.
Just not feeling that.
Did they actually say...
It wasn't like that. And, you know, they made it sound like a fling. Just a okay.
Now, was this a fling?
Flings.
Hold on. Was this a fling that happened while Malcolm Merlyn's wife was still alive? I mean, it pretty much have to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
His wife, whom he cared so deeply for that he went nuts and went off and joined the League of Assassins to avenge her death?
Came back to kill 500 people, meaning to kill 5,000? Yeah, I don't know. I think one of them was comforting the other. So, I mean, they both lost their spouse. And I forget who was comforting whom, but...
Well, wait. How does that work? Because Thea's like 20.
I don't know.
Is that what happened?
That makes sense, though. It must have been after he lost his wife, I guess. Because, I don't know. Screw it.
I didn't think he left his wife. His wife got killed.
Uncle,
so confused.
Imagine a white flag and imagine me waving it. I don't care.
Which is a problem with the writers.
I don't
see any other way around it. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I choose to spend my life in better ways than chasing down that poor plot line.
I mean, it makes sense that... I mean, if his wife died, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and then Moira cheated, that would make perfect sense, because Moira was awful. And I think she did at some point say that, you know, her husband was cheating too, and she was trying to get back at him or whatever and was angry. So that would make sense.
Just family full of cheaters, those queens.
A family full of tears.
Now, all right, so going back to... Does Oliver have a kid out there somewhere?
He does! He does. Connor Hawk. And they did mention it like a couple of times. Like they hinted at it. He doesn't know about it. But there was like a scene with a chick in a coffee shop talking about a guy she once knew or whatever, and she's talking about a baby or something.
I know, but paid her off at some point, wrote her a very substantial check to go away.
Is that Moira you're trying to say?
The forgotten
okay,
M word.
Okay.
That confuses both my mouth and mine. Is Connor Hawk a real thing? I don't know. Is that a person? Do I need to wiki that and see what happens?
Connor Hawk is the second Green Arrow. He is Oliver Queen's son. He is a real thing. He was a Justice League member during the Grant Morrison Howard Porter run in 97.
Excellent.
He is very much a real thing. Yes.
Excellent. Of course, I don't want this show to go on so long that I actually see Connor Hawk, but still.
Right.
Nice,
he would be
nice
about 8 years old,
somewhere.
I imagine. He would probably be about 8 years old at this point in the show.
I'll take a flash forward. That's one of the fun parts. Oh, Felicity's so happy. Guess what? They come in a baby.
That would be kind of fun. It would.
I could deal with more Felicity's mom, by the way. I find her amusing.
I could go without ever seeing Felicity's mother again.
I found her amusing. I know.
It's not that the actress did a bad job.
She was at least a little bit fun. On a show like this, I'll take a little bit fun.
Well, hopefully they'll have some more places to go that are fun, that don't involve us, you know, making fun of an old lady in a short skirt. I mean...
I know. Like, I think there's ways to go, but...
Like, don't give up the rich boyfriend for the other rich boyfriend. Do you love him? Oh.
Yeah, I at least found her a little bit endearing. She's an innocent. I mean, at the very least, she was the note of realism that told Felicity, like, there are two really attractive, extremely rich men fighting over you. What the hell is your problem?
Mm-hmm.
Life is okay.
And she's the president of a major corporation.
I mean, yeah, she's
just saying.
Her professional career has been in line the entire time. Aside from that little goth period where apparently she hacked the crap out of some things, but that was interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
She looked so weird in that goth stuff.
I liked it.
It was amusing, but it did not look right on her. Like, I really wanted her to get into some fast casual wear and get the blonde back, and I don't know.
I don't know. She looked uncomfortable. I kind of liked the goth thing. I liked the goth thing. I thought she was cute.
It was a fun aside, but
and Felicity's one of those characters that I actually really like on the show. She has been annoying at times.
She's one of the people I don't have genuine qualms with. They've developed her. She's kind of always made sense.
Yeah, I mean, they do a great job. I mean, she's easily the smartest person on that team.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, she's Fred Durkin.
She's a good character. And as much as it doesn't make sense, like, it feels rushed and unearned the way they kind of threw them together. Her and Ollie.
No, it seemed the reason it seemed rewarding is because they were doing they've been slapping around more red herrings than a fish market, and that's what they've done to us for the entire show. And hey, in this case, we all knew it was coming. Just go with it.
Yeah,
like we know they're going to end up together, so just go ahead and get them together, and let's do a story where they're together. And then if you give me an interesting reason for them to break up, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
But don't give me stock explanations. Come up with something new. Now, hey, season 4, they're going to have all kinds of crap that's apparently going to be new, and they're going to change the approach to a lot of these characters, and good for all that. We'll get there.
Sebastian Blood. The only thing worse than Sebastian Blood was his alter ego, Brother Blood, who basically was auto-tuned Scarecrow.
Yeah. Which
little army he enslaved raises
Scarecrow, like, sounds like something I could put some legs on. That sounds like it could be genuinely frightening. Was not. He puts on a mask that I swear he picked up at Party City. I think I've seen that thing before.
Mm-hmm.
And just
it was
go,
bad.
Like that character was interesting for the 2 seconds it took me to realize that his name wasn't Jason Blood. And then it was over. It was all downhill from there.
By the way, you know who I miss is the guy that I don't even remember his name. That's how sad that is. The guy that was basically married to Moira.
The dapper black guy.
Yeah, that guy.
He had a good run. He was an actual. I've almost forgotten, what do you call him? Oh, character. He had motivations and did things according to what was happening around him.
Walter Steele.
So obviously they got rid of him quickly. Yes,
Walter Steele.
We missed the Walter. Come back. And
he's like, no, you were into some deep shit, Moira, and I'm out.
Right. No, he was about the most believable person on the show, because he basically figured out how deep the entire thing ran and went, oh, hell no. Oh, okay. No, no. Y'all can just do all this by yourself.
Yeah, and shows up briefly to you know, help her run for mayor, but God, I'd love to see him again. I really did enjoy him.
He was too noble and well thought out to be on this show. He's off to a premiere cable somewhere.
I also liked Shadow. I liked her too.
I did like Shadow.
I really did.
Worst death ever.
Right? I wasn't even sure what they were talking about. Like, wait, did he actually, like Ivo tells him to choose and he like chooses Sarah. He jumps in front of Sarah. But the way they shot it, I couldn't even tell what the hell had happened. I'm like, wait, what? Did he choose somebody? I thought he just kind of ran out and
I'll tell
randomly
you exactly what the hell
said
happened.
No.
They wrote this absolutely gruesome scene and remembered they were airing it on the CW and had to cut around it.
Oh, that makes more sense.
That's,
I hadn't thought about
that's
it.
That's my
way.
Working theory, and I will stand by it. Because it's a very gruesome scream. Probably scream, too. And they have
it's messed up.
Oliver do that same thing twice. Shoot me, stab me, kill me, throw me in a plane. He's one of the most apoptic characters I've ever seen.
He's
no desire to live.
He's Bruce Wayne before returning to Batman and Dark Knight Returns, just running around with a death wish.
Downright emo.
No. I'm a terrible person. I have failed this city.
Right. In his off hours, he can be caught at... Oh, I can't remember the name of that stupid store and random malls everywhere. Oh, bless my heart. I am an adult. I can't remember the name of that terrible store.
Hot Topic?
Thank you. And
hot,
damn you.
Hot Topic? Yeah. Hey, Hot Topic sells lots of Harley Quinn and Batman-related t-shirts.
I'll bet.
They do receive a fair amount of my business.
Again,
not as good as Hot Topics, though, man. Hot Topic has more of a variety. We're not getting off into Hot Topic.
Moving the anyway. Right the fuck on. I'm gonna go ahead and grab that cat by the tail and sling it in the other direction here.
Right, right. It is an awful store, but they have some good products. Summer Glau, one of the most wasted characters. They wasted that actress.
No, there was... she went to the Stephen Amell camp of not showing any damned emotions.
Well, yeah, but they they could have done something with Isabel Rochev. They could have it could have actually been a surprise that she was a real baddie. That she was what's her name on Ravager? Is that her name?
I can't remember.
Deathstroke's really daughter.
It was last year, and I tried to forget everything as soon as I could.
But they, you know,
so,
she
I mean,
just,
to be clear,
she...
to anyone who listens to this, if we've gotten any of this correct, we're doing it completely from memory from over a year ago, because I would have cut off my tongue before I watched that season again.
Season two was terrible.
It was just,
oh.
It was the Brita of DC broadcasting so far.
Oh, by the way, my girlfriend pointed out something a couple of weeks ago that made me laugh. She said, isn't it kind of weird how on Arrow, the only way someone can actually be a superhero is if they get handed a jacket?
She's not wrong. It has to be a meaningful handing of jacket.
Yeah, like Sarah has to hand Laurel the jacket.
It fits you. Oh, it does.
It didn't, by the way. It didn't fit her. It does,
no,
I mean,
no,
to this day, that jacket does not fit on that woman.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
It looks like she's borrowed her niece's jacket because she's cold.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And is selfishly taking
it
from her
niece.
No, I
mean, it's one of the few things Nyssa has said in the show so far. I was like, yeah, get her. All right. But, you know, she actually said the jacket does not fit you. Eh.
Nyssa is actually an interesting character. I enjoy her.
Could be. If she wants nothing but revenge. Just ever. The Revenger, I'll call her.
Yeah, but, you know.
See, now she...
I don't know. That actress has an ability to, like... Show me the cogs. She shows me the cogs working in her mind, and it makes me feel like it's real. I feel like there's more to her than what's happening. By the way,
I'll give her that.
Yeah, never mind that. By the way,
no, I mean
that's for next week.
She's had cool scenes, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she does with Merlin. I wouldn't mind seeing them try to usurp each other, play Tom and Jerry with that weird finger jewelry.
Now, aside from God,
you're welcome to try. But before that,
aside from Slade Wilson, who is my favorite villain thus far, I didn't really care for what was going on around him, but I liked him.
He was awesome.
I think my favorite villain was Ivo.
Yeah, I didn't like
Ivo
him too
was
much.
A badass.
Yeah, I didn't dig that. I didn't dig the whole Mirakuru thing. It was all very, very boring. You know, you've got all this stuff going on the island, and what you think to do with it is run around looking for some sort of super serum thing. Screw it. Just screw that.
Jason?
What?
Are you listening to yourself? You have an island, you have a ship. You have an island, you have a ship. This is not Ivo, this is you, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me you're not going to look for a Mirakuru? A super soldier serum? You're telling me that you would give up the chance to be Captain America?
I think I would fix
my boat. We've discussed at length on this podcast What would we do with superpowers? How happy and joyous we would
both
be. Super
serum seems like a long way to go. Surely there's a toxic waste dump your boat could get to. Hell, it's probably a nuclear-powered boat. Just go dip in the, you know, go take a sledgehammer to the one of the reactor cores and grab you some radiation. See if that helps. Maybe you'll Hulk out or something.
Well, the guy's clearly mentally unstable. I mean,
didn't care for him. Didn't
I don't
care
know.
For most of the boat. I was just so freaking bored by this point. May not
the
be
boat
his fault.
Was off.
I was so bored with the show by that point.
Ivo was interesting to me. But again, much like with Slade, I didn't care for the things going on around him.
Like the show.
It's interesting that way. We're like, they'll have a character, like the most interesting characters are just saddled with the most boring storylines.
Yeah.
That boat was bad. It was bad.
It only got interesting when they actually escaped
and got on the submarine.
Oh, the preacher guy running out with the submarine thing. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his Russian friend. And then the list drops off.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Well, that's better than we'd had all season, so.
And by that point, it's just basically, something happened. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know.
And the worst, the biggest chunk of dickery that those writers presented me that entire season.
Yeah.
This is my big one. This is the one that I hated the most. Because all I want to know at this point is what happened on that island. Remember, that's the part I liked about season one. It's the thing I liked about. It's the only thing I liked about season two, was still trying to figure out what happened on that island. He gets off the freaking island, and he just shows up in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm left with, at the end of season two, I'm sitting here going, come on, I've got to wait. Now I have to figure out what happened in Hong Kong? Like, connect the dots, for God's sake. I didn't like it.
Yeah, the flashbacks have grown. Like I said, in season one, they were the best part of the show. Season two,
easily.
They were very much the worst part of the show.
Easily.
And they've just become irrelevant now. Like, they're even having trouble tying, like, season three, once you get there, they're having trouble tying the flashbacks to the current storyline. Like, it started out as a neat little gimmick. It really is. It started out as a nice
now,
little gimmick.
Now they have a real time problem because he was 5 years, right? And
mm-hmm.
he spent 1 year there.
Mm-hmm.
He spent 2 years on the island, essentially, right? And then a third year in Hong Kong.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
And then fourth year he goes back to the island, is that right?
Maybe, or maybe
do
he goes someplace
he
else.
Where did he go after?
Maybe he goes to Coast City. I don't know.
He's off to his next adventure.
Maybe the fourth season
he's
flashback
go to
is Coast City.
He's got to go to Russia at some point.
Yeah, a lot of stuff
he's
happened
got the
to
tats.
That.
He's got all that. Now he's got to be in Russia somehow for a while.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to that.
But then it all culminates in him being back on the island alone. And
mm-hmm.
there long enough that he grows a pretty impressive amount of facial hair.
And gets used to sleeping on the ground again.
Right. Yeah, he gets hard. and then makes his
all
way
right.
back. And whatever he's doing, he's there long enough that even him, whatever it was that marooned him, he wants back. Because he's clearly got an entire setup. That first scene in the entire show is very intricately contrived to find the next boat that passes and alert them. Oh, well. That's going to be a hard thing to wrap up. I'm voting Russia. I want to see Russia. Let's see him be a mob boss.
I don't want to see Russia.
Russia.
I don't want to see any more flashbacks. I just don't care anymore.
Oh, come on. Give you season
no, come
four
on.
Worth
I
of
don't
flashbacks
want to,
to get through year four and then, or hell, just, you know. I mean, I'll be annoyed if they don't do both. They have 2 years to make up for. They have 2 years to explain. So they have to do it. And there have been flashbacks
you know what
the
I'm
entire
hoping.
Show. So.
I'm sure they're going to do the whole 5 years. If the show lasts more than 5 years, I hope they flash forward.
Mm-hmm. See, that'd be good. I'll even take, you know, go
they
ahead
just
and
pull
up,
a Lost.
Guys. Go ahead and fit 2 years
completely.
Worth of flashbacks into 1 year and then show me the Justice
oh,
League.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's face it,
so,
isn't this what, that's what it's all about, right? This is all one long tease until you show me the freaking Justice League.
Speaking of,
DC
one of
movies?
The highlights of season two was bringing in Barry Allen.
Oh, yeah. And they immediately
season
brought
two
him
of
on.
Arrow
he's too interesting. Put him in a coma. Kid's got way too much spunk.
I couldn't have put that better myself. I wouldn't have thought to, but that was great. That was fantastic.
Oh, I appreciate it.
And they did. That's basically what happened. This kid
mm-hmm.
comes on, Barry Allen, interesting as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Felicity has some kind of a crush other than Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it might work out, and coma. Well, all right.
and ... coma. Oh, like if that's the elevator bitch, by the time you get off the next floor, you're not happy with me.
Yeah. But seriously, season one moved plot wise. Like it just belted through things, and
it was on ball bearings, man. It was going.
And then season two made up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Season two moved like a freaking snail.
Mm-hmm. No, if I sat in the woods so long that my feet eventually grew into vegetation, I think I could still move faster than that season.
So what are the things that we like about this show? Why are we doing this? Well,
podcast, again, once I start thinking about season two for too long, I don't. I just want to burn my eyes for having viewed these things.
Right.
I just cut off an ear in spite.
But if you could actually give a recommendation for watching Arrow, what would that be?
All right. That's a fun exercise. Like how would you convince a passerby to watch this show without getting all?
Because we've both stated that we love watching this show. We've both already stated that we love watching this show. But all we've done for like an hour is talk about how much we hate it.
I regret nothing. I'm confused. What is the criticism? That we only have an hour?
Well, yeah. But there has to be something. And I'll be damned. There, for as stiff as he was in season one, I really do like Stephen Amell as Oliver Queen.
No, I mean, yeah, he has himself expressed interest in smiling more, and I appreciate that. He really is. We've talked about this, though. Like, this show would be so much better if you just told Stephen Amell to improv it. Just throw a green suit on him
I doubt that somehow, but... This is the man who wants to do a supernatural crossover. Uh-uh. I'm not watching 11 years of that
He's
show.
A dreamer.
I'm not watching no, 11 years watch of that. Supernatural.
No, I'm a completist at heart, and if I have to go back and watch Supernatural so I understand that crossover, I will never forgive them.
Yeah.
You'll be mad enough if they bring Constantine in, because you'll have to go watch like 9 whole episodes.
No, I'll be happy if they bring Constantine in. That'd be cool.
Happy to finally have an excuse to watch Constantine.
Well, I mean, it would be cool to continue the universe. That way we didn't get a season of a show that doesn't matter.
Yeah, you gotta hate those.
I was excited about Constantine. It was just that second episode bored me so much we both have so much TV just in the DC catalog.
There's a lot of capes around, brother. There's a lot of capes around.
Man, and you factor in Marvel, and good Lord, man. Second episode bored me. Can't be bothered with it unless it's actually going somewhere.
I know. Some other time we'll recap and recant that. All right, how would I convince someone to watch Arrow? And I assume I can't just tell someone that that you have your choice of an attractive Oliver Queen or an attractive Felicity Smoke to get you through. I feel like every time it gets better. I feel like if I start a sentence, it's going to end as a question. My tone's going to go up at the end of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff going on. It's good.
It's not good. It's not. Except it is. It's not good, sometimes.
Good. I mean, maybe the best way I could describe it is, you know, if you don't have something else more important going on in your life, it's there for you. I mean,
that's true.
I'm sure there are homeless people and puppies that need saving, but you know,
I
could just watch this show. I suppose.
Yeah. My strongest argument for watching Arrow is it ties into The Flash.
So you have to. It's documentary evidence that requires review.
Now, this may change in the next year.
Well, obviously the sophomore slump is heavy within that crew. So, hey, we'll see. No, like...
Yeah, I mean, they...
Maybe it's this. Like, I can't not watch this show. I did threaten that if season two didn't pick it up a little bit, that I would. But by the end of season two, those last couple episodes, you know, shit finally happened. So I was able to actually kind of come back to it. And then season three, man, it had a short leash. I mean, a short leash. Mm-hmm. I was back to the experiment at that point.
Right.
It only had an episode now you're on this, to hook me.
Now that you're on this podcast, and I believe I have made you contractually obligated to watch the show. So
I'm a proud owner of a Bic lighter. Bring me said contract. I know how fire works, my friend.
For all of its flaws, Arrow can be really badass.
No, that kind of is it. Like, there's a, when they do it right, there's a lot of swagger. It's cool.
When they,
some of the action's great. Story's good. I still
about
like,
once.
I mean, I still like the story.
About once every episode, they do it really right. About once an episode, I feel like they get it really right enough to drag you to the next segment.
At this point, usually it's
not lately.
It
hasn't
something
been
straight up badass. Oh. It has, the show has done this, though. It has explored a lot of territory that I haven't gotten to see. It's brought out a lot of villains that you didn't think you'd see. It's brought out a lot of fun characters. I do miss it being a little bit of a, you know, monster of the week. See, you know, you've got 22, 23 episodes to work with. I kind of like the things they do where, like, somebody has a three-episode arc or something. So I've got a villain for three or four weeks. I get to play with this villain. So I can look back and remember, like, man, September was awesome. You remember the Royal Flush Gang? Something like that. I miss that. I miss playing with the villains. I miss... that seemed like a big deal. Like, season one, they did. They cram-packed it with a lot of stuff. And season two, they kind of played with the characters they already had on the board and completely miscalculated how interesting those characters were.
Mm-hmm.
So by season three, you know, I've got, they had to pull back in some more stuff. And that was the right direction. Go back and chew through the catalog of intensely interesting properties you have at your disposal. I don't know how else to pitch it. I guess we call it.
All right. I think that's all we have for this week. Join us next week when we recap Arrow Season 3 and The Flash Season 1. We are DC On Screen, and you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook. If you're a Marvel fan and you're looking for a podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, go check out our friends Matt Carroll and Jeff Randall on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, which can also be found on iTunes and Stitcher, as well as mcucast.com. I'm David C. Robertson. You can find my original sketch comedies and web series at maladjusted.tv. Take it easy, y'all.